Welcome to the Grace Point Church podcast. Here at GPC, we want you to know God, love people, and live sent. From wherever you're listening, we hope you're encouraged by this week's message. If you want to learn more about Grace Point, head over to gracepointchurch.net. And now, this week's message.
Hey, welcome to Grace Point. If you're first time with us, if you're just joining us or you're checking us out, we're glad to have you. And listen, don't be a stranger. We want to connect with you as much as you want us to connect with you. And so one of the ways we do that is just by having you text in. Now, this is important because if you have prayer requests, if you have questions about your next step of obedience in Christ, if you want to explore what it means to be a part of Grace Point, then we would love to help walk with you. And that's kind of like the avenue, the on-ramp to that. So just text in. But also, while we're talking about the connecting side of things, if you have been in this journey of your faith, and maybe you're new to the area and you're looking for that church home or something like that, or just what meaningful community looks like, I want to invite you next Sunday to come at 9:10. And we're going to be having what's called First Step Experience. It won't be in this room. It will be in another room. Then you can attend the second service if you desire. But First Step Experience is that opportunity to kind of just learn a lot, okay? We don't want to talk you into joining Grace Point, okay? Anything I can talk you into or somebody else can talk you into, somebody else can talk you out of, all right? We want you to hear from God. So what we're going to do is we're going to provide you with as much information as we can so that you can go home and pray intelligently about what it is to be a part of Grace Point and how to be a meaningful family member in this family of faith. And so think about it. If you want to be a part of that, then again, you can scan that QR code or just go online and sign up for that. Hey, we're starting a new series of messages today in the book of Malachi. If you don't know where that is, be finding it. Feel free to go to the front of your Bible. There's a table of contents there. You can find it there and be finding Malachi, the last book in the Old Testament. I want to welcome you to Selfie World. If you haven't realized that, we live in a selfie-obsessed world. And, you know, since smartphones and social media, it has only become an accelerant to the whole selfie world in which we live. I remember I bought my first selfie stick and my kids gave me a really hard time about that. But now we use our selfie arms. And so however you capture your selfie photographs, it's just a part of our world. Since 2007 is the first introduction to the iPhone, as you might know. 2023, 6 years later, the distinguished word of the year was selfie, made it to the Oxford Dictionary. So it has become rapidly a part of our culture, defining us in so many ways, or at least not defining us, but at least the way we express ourselves. I don't count these. Some AI algorithm out there counts these, but 93 million photos a day are considered selfie photos. All right, again, that same people who are counting those 93 million photos say this about our photo taking, that most pictures, the number one object that we take a photo of is not our dogs or our cats or our kids or our friends, but it's of ourselves. I'll let that just sink in a little bit. That's how much we take photos of ourselves. Same study, 16 to 25-year-old women take 3 selfie photos and it takes them 15 minutes to get it just right. That is 5 minutes a photo. That is 5 hours a week just taking selfie photos. So again, it's our world, it's our culture, it's a part of who we are, but you got to be careful because the selfie, if you're not careful, you will have accidents and things will happen to you. Here's an example of one person who wasn't paying attention to the game and a ball starts coming at her head. I don't know if that's photoshopped. That looks too perfect. But if that's true, she is in a mess. All right. Also, taking a selfie photo with animals. There's actually Instagram groups out there called Turons where you literally are, you're a moron if tourists that are out there and, you take a photo with an animal's fine, but that animal may not want its photo taken. If you go to the next slide, you'll see that same squirrel's jumping on his back and chasing after him. Beware of the selfie. Now, this is nothing to be aware of, this one. I just think it's funny because the most common selfie that you kind of see online, somebody primps themselves, gets themselves all perfect in the mirror, and then they got to take a picture of themselves in a mirror, which is almost like double selfies. I don't know. But then you got this person who's taking a picture of themselves because they're all decked out on the nines. But if you notice, the golden retriever is doing his thing in the toilet. So again, selfies. It's a part of who we are. We laugh at them. We do them ourselves to our own demise sometimes. In fact, the National Park Service says that 12 people a year will die taking a selfie at the Grand Canyon. That's not a large number unless you're one of the 12. And just the reality that's a part of our world. But hey, selfies did not start in 2007. They've been around for a good long time. In fact, you have to go back to Greek mythology to understand that selfies have been around since this guy. He was gazing at himself in the mirror, and Narcissus saw himself and so enamored by himself and so caught up in himself, he falls into the water and drowns. Now, obviously, we get the word Narcissus from this guy, this Greek mythologist. And the reality is that nobody wants to be called a narcissist. But here's also a reality, is that there's a lot of narcissism in some people, in a few people, but there's a little narcissism in all of us. You know, it's just a reality that we do get caught up in ourselves. We want to build a world around us and make it about us. And so that actually begins to infiltrate even into the way we connect with God. Believe it or not, there's a book I read about a year and a half ago, and it's a really good book, troubling book, When Narcissism Comes to Church. And I just want to, again, narrowing the gap down from this general selfie world that we live in to realizing that it's really points to a narcissistic tendency inside of all of us, that actually narcissism doesn't just stay outside the walls of the church, it actually comes to church. And when that happens, it begins to change even how we exist with God, exist and connect with others. If you take the selfie mindset, okay, just the selfie mindset, and you marry it or add it to worship, what you have is narcissistic worship, or what I want to call today, selfie worship. So you found hopefully the book of Malachi. If you found Malachi, you got to understand the big picture. Those of you who went through Discipleship University and took Old Testament survey, this is just going to be review for you because you know this. You can take the Old Testament and divide it into three sections. You've got the Old Testament history section, which is from Genesis to Nehemiah. I love history. I like studying history. I wish I'd spend more time in this area just taking it all in and processing the narrative of God and how he has worked through time over the years. Then you got poetry. Now, probably poetry gets more love than any other of the Old Testament. And by the way, let me just say about the Old Testament. It's not old in the sense that it's out of date. It's old in the sense that it's first. In fact, I wish we called it the First Testament or the First Covenant. And then we have the second, the New Testament covenant, and it's like the first and then the second. And again, there's many covenants in between there, but the macro covenants is the old and the new. And sometimes, again, we skip over the old because we don't think that that's that important. We're New Testament church and all that, but you got to understand it in its full picture and context. But you have the prophets. You got Isaiah to Malachi. Now, I have to admit, a lot of people, myself included, do not favor going to the prophets. One is they might be telling me truths I don't want to hear. Two, they're hard to understand sometimes. They get into some of the poetry and some of the imagery and some of the parallelisms. It gets really hard. It's not easy reading. And so sometimes what we'll do is we'll hop into Isaiah, find a messianic message, a prophecy, or we'll go over to Daniel if we like eschatology in the end times and try to figure out what the big toe on the giant is in the book of Daniel. Or we might like a fish story and read the book of Jonah with our kids or something like that. That's the level that most people go when you go to the Old Testament prophets. And you take the Old Testament prophets and then you break them down even more. And you got the major prophets and you got the minor prophets. When I say major, I'm not saying these are more important than the minors. They're just saying the size of them. Okay? So I'm giving you all of this because all of this context does come into play here. We're going to one of the minor prophets, and I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I would really like to know, how many of y'all have ever even read Malachi? Or even knew it was in the Bible? I actually wanted to name one of our kids Malachi. I love that name. It means messenger. Okay, when you think about Malachi, 5th century BC, so about 500 years before Christ, and you got this name of a messenger named Malachi, and the thing is that the messenger has a message from God. So it's a little bit of redundancy there. It's like going to eat at Table Mesa. You're going to table restaurant, okay? This is like the messenger has a message. That's what you have in Malachi. So when you come to this and you unpack this, you got to understand that there are 6 oracles, okay? I'll define what an oracle is in a moment. For every one of the oracles that the prophet Malachi gives to the people of Israel, God's people, they turn right around and ask a question. What do you mean? What are you saying? We'll get to that in a moment. You'll see the structure here in a moment. And then followed up by another layer of, here, let me explain it to you. So when you come to this, you have an oracle. What's an oracle? You look at verse 1 of Malachi, and you'll find that very word. An oracle says, the oracle of the word of the Lord to Israel by Malachi. You can see the whole structure of it right there. Now, oracle means this. A burdensome message. This is not a warm fuzzy. For the next several weeks as we look at the book of Malachi, I'm really not expecting you to get a warm fuzzy. This is going to be somewhat a hard-hitting message. Because that's what Malachi and the people needed in that day. Now maybe some of us don't need all of these oracles because there's 6 of them. We don't need all of them, but we need some of them, or maybe, and I'll let God weed out which ones you need to hear and not. But here's the key. When you see that structure of an oracle followed by a question, but what are you saying, God? Kind of questions, followed by an explanation, points out one very clear thing. Self-awareness is an issue. Self-awareness, if you're going to avoid the pitfalls of life, and I'm calling this series Pitfalls because I almost called it, and I said it last week, 6 mistakes you never want to make, okay? Because there's 6 oracles. There's 6 pitfalls. But it's not more than a mistake. Like I make a mistake when I'm reaching for something and I get on a little stepladder and I miss a rung coming down and maybe I jar my back and I have to go to the chiropractor. That's a mistake, okay? A pitfall is you climb a 12-foot ladder leaning against a weak wall. And the wall collapses and the ladder falls and you fall down and you might end up in the hospital. You might end up dead. That's the intensity of this. A pitfall is one of those that you've got to be aware of. And you've got to do everything in your power and in your mind and your soul to make sure you don't fall in this area. So let's talk about pitfall or oracle number 1. I'm calling it selfie worship. Let us beware of selfie worship. Selfie worship is where worship is really about me. It's really about what I want. It's really about what pleases me. And yes, I'm worshiping God. God's the object of my worship. But really, it's about what I want. And so here's some examples of selfie worship in our selfie world that we live, is that I want to look for a church that is self-serving, okay? I go to a church and I look for the goods and services of that church. What does this church offer me? What kind of goods and services are they going to bring? What kind of band are they going to have? What kind of teacher from the stage are they going to have? And again, we kind of can get into a consumeristic kind of mindset if we're not careful. Well, I also want convenience, okay? You'll hear, if you go to the First Step Experience, you're going to hear us make this statement that a church membership is not a convenience and a choice, it's a commitment and a calling. You need to be listening to where God's calling you and plant yourself there. Because it's not just convenient, sometimes it's inconvenient. Also, selfie worship is whenever it's non-invasive. Hey, I like good psychological soothings. I like God to give me life hacks. I like to know what a strategic plans are and that God can help me tactically get to a better marriage. And all it is about that level, but it's not about, hey, here's an oracle from God, and you might need to hear it even if you don't want to hear it. See, selfie worship will go, I don't want to go to that church because they're talking about six mistakes and they're talking about pitfalls. I'm going to come back when they're talking about rainbows and butterflies. Be careful. But here's another one. And this is actually the one that is marks the believers or the believers in Malachi's time is they lacked generosity and they lacked sacrificial living. Because if we're going to talk about worship, we cannot talk about worship and not talk about generosity and sacrifice and commitment and giving of ourselves. You cannot talk about. Let's go now back to verse 6, okay? Malachi chapter 1, verse 6. Kind of the introduction, and then we go to verse 6, and here we go. The sons, this is just God speaking here. A son honors his father. And a servant, his master. If then, now God's going to take that metaphor of father-servant kind of relationship of honoring and respecting. He's going to turn it to himself. If then I am a father, where's my honor? If I am a master, because God is master of the world, where is my fear? And this word fear is actually the word for awe. Where's the awe? Where's the respect? Where's the honor? Where is it? Because if I'm your father, if I'm your master, then I deserve your honor, your respect, your awe. And so he's asking this question of the people in that day. Now let me just pause right there. Because I got one word to describe honor, respect, all, and all that. And that is worship. That's what worship is. It is giving honor to him. It is giving respect to him. It is being in awe of him. It changes your posture. It changes your emotions. It changes your life. It's because you see God in all of his glory. And you're like, oh my goodness, you are God. And that changes you. That's what he's bringing him to. Now, the word worship you're not going to find in Hebrew. You're not going to find it in the Greek because it's not a Greek word. It's not a Hebrew word. It's actually an Anglo-Saxon word that was introduced in the 1300s. But it is capturing the heart and the essence of fear, respect, and honor. So when we talk about worship, we're talking about God deserving our worship. And here may be a light coming onto your head kind of reality is God wants us to worship him. God expects us to worship him. We're all worshiping something. We're all giving value to something. We're all honoring something. We're all fearing and respecting something. But what God wants and what God expects and what God will only tolerate is if he is the one that we are honoring, respecting, and worshiping. I got news for you. God's jealous. The Bible says it, Exodus, that our God is a jealous God. Now, if you made it all and you own it all, which is the universe in which we live, then you have the right to expect all the respect to come to you. So if you believe that God made it all and owns it all, then you ought to understand that, hey, yeah, God can be jealous. In fact, this is what it says in Isaiah. It says, I alone am the Lord, your God. No other God may share my glory. I will not let idols share my glory. Whole conversation to be about modern day idols. We're not just talking about little wooden figurines that we might carve out and bow down to. We're talking about idols in our day-to-day American life, and that's a whole conversation unto itself. But here's the point that you need to see. God doesn't share that with anybody. He deserves it. He expects it. And when we don't give it to him, pitfall, we are heading into a dangerous spot. And the reality is so many people are living their life just like the people here, unaware. Because he makes this statement to them, and then keep going in verse 6. But you say, how have we despised your name? By not giving honor and not giving glory and not giving fear and respect to God, you're despising him? Yes. How are we despising you? And then what he does is he breaks it down. So I want to ask the question today. How does selfie worship despise God? Just like the people in Israel, just like the people of God were asking on that day, how have we despised you? I want to ask the question for you and I today to wrestle with, and that is, how does selfie worship despise God? There are three images I want to point to. Three images that he points out to help them understand. One is when we give God our second best. We offer God our worship and it's half-hearted. We offer God our worship and it's not full. And it's not right. See, God made it very clear in Leviticus chapter 22 what a standard of worship is. I know most of us don't read the Leviticus. I don't get off excited about reading the book of Leviticus. But you read the book of Leviticus and you'll find that worship was very important to God. He builds a framework for it. He puts standards for it. He puts it in place. And that's what we're supposed to live up to. But in Leviticus 22, he says that you need to bring your best to me, your first to me. That's the standard. But what were the people of Israel doing on this day? Look at verse 7. By offering polluted, circle the word polluted, food upon an altar. But you say you have polluted by saying that the Lord's table may be despised. Verse 8, when you offer blind animals in sacrifice, is that not evil? And when you offer those who are lame and sick, and later on he will talk about him being polluted, he'll talk about him being lame and sick again. It's literally something that is not setting well with God. When we bring God second best, half-baked, unprepared, beautiful worship to God, our very best, God is not pleased. In fact, this is the way the Message paraphrased it in verse 7. He says, you say, not so, how do you despise, how do we despise you? By your shoddy, sloppy, defiling worship. The statement that we've said around here for years, it's not original with me, we've said it for 23 years, I can be exact on that, is that excellence inspires, it honors God and inspires people. We want to bring God our best. Why? He deserves it. He expects it. He'll share it with no other. If we're giving our best to anybody, anything else, and not giving our best and our first to God, then there's something out of kilter, and we may not be aware of it. We're lacking self-awareness, and we might be heading off or literally already in the careen. Here's a couple of verses for you just to help you understand how God expects worship that is equal to him, of similar value as him. He says this, Psalm 29, verse 2, he says, ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name. What does he do? What's on? What does he deserve? That's what we give to him. Worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness. Ascribe to the Lord in chapter 96, to the Lord the glory due his name. Bring an offering. Come into his courts. Worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness. The glory due his name. Psalm chapter 7, verse 17 says, I will give to the Lord the thanks due his righteousness. Now we're talking about his character and his conduct. So if God is right and good, then I need to bring God, gifts to God and praise to God and worship to God and myself to God that is right and good. It's what is due him. We have to ask ourselves, am I bringing God second rate worship, or am I giving him what's due his name? Illustrate it like this. So let's say it's the anniversary time. Important date, right? Don't want to forget those. If you haven't figured that one out, I can tell you, you don't want to forget the anniversary. So you go on a date and you're going to take your spouse to the primo steak place in Northwest Arkansas. I don't know for you, maybe Doe's, could be Fat Chef in Perry Creek. It could be, there's a place named Fat Chef and evidently it's pretty good. I haven't gone there. But, it could be, the River Grill across the highway here. It could be let's go with one that maybe we all know, maybe we've eaten there or not, is Ruth Chris. Pretty expensive place. Hey, but it's your anniversary. So you take your bride, you take your husband on this special night, and you get there and you look on the menu and you both love steak and you get the porterhouse for two over $100 steak. And you're going to get that. And you got to have some vegetables. So you get some roasted Brussels sprouts. Only time I want to have Brussels sprouts is probably a time like that. And then you got to have, if you haven't had it, you got to have it, is the pecan-crusted sweet potato casserole. Can I get a witness? Anybody have that in here? Okay, that's good stuff. Now, that'll make your mouth water. But it's your anniversary. You've had drinks. You've had carrot cake to top it off. Okay? And then the night is fine. And you had great service. It's been a great atmosphere. The waiter brings you the check. It lays it down. You're looking at $250 to $300. I mean, but it's a special night, right? And you've taken your special someone there. But you know what? It's due $300. But, $50 should do. You pull a $50 bill out, and you throw it on the table, and you start to walk out. All of a sudden, the manager's coming after you. Hey, you know, we misunderstand something. Something go wrong. Something not work out right. No. I love the meal. Waiter was great. Atmosphere was great. Everything's great. But I just felt like paying $50. Something wrong with that in anybody's economy. Yes. Giving God lame, sick, unprioritized worship? Come on. He's due worship of his name, of his glory, of his righteousness. How can we bring him anything less? That's why in Colossians he says he must be first place among anything and everything. He must be given the first place in everything of our life. We bring him in Proverbs, it says, the first fruits of all of our increase, because he deserves our first, he deserves our best. If you've been around here any length of time, you've heard me say this as a motto of mine. You make yours, live it out, please. Is that God gets my first moment of every day. I know I'm best in the morning, so I give him my first moments of the day. My thoughts are clear. My mind is clear. I've had my cup of coffee. You know, it's a good moment to just listening to God. I give him the first day out of every week. I mean, this is a priority, whether I was pastoring or not. I'm going to be in a church worshiping with my family or whatever. That's going to be, I'm going to give him the first dime out of every dollar. God set that system up and it's beautiful. You make $10,000 a month, that's great. It's a dime out of every dollar. You make $1,000 a month, dime out of every dollar. It's like beautiful economy, God, but you're going to get my first and you're going to get my best. You're going to get the first consideration in all my decisions because that's what worship looks like. He gets first. He gets my best. Not the lame, not the sick, not the polluted, not the kind of offering and the worship that despises him. Number two. You want to live a selfie worship life? When my pleasure supersedes God's pleasure. When I realize, okay, this is all I'm going to do, or this is all I want to do, or this is all I want to give, or this is all I want to sing, or this is all I want to pray, or this, you know, then it's about you and not about God and who he is. You got to realize, you, if you're a child of God, you were chosen before the foundations of the earth, Ephesians 1:4 says. Why? So that, ace is the Greek word there, to praise his glorious grace. Do you realize that before this world was ever created, before you ever breathed your breath, before your parents breathed their breath, that God had a plan for your life, and that you would be a child of his, and that you would actually bring worship to him? That's the purpose of your life. It's the aim of your life. Now let's come back to the sad, sad story of Malachi. Because here's what worship does. Worship right sizes and rightly centers our life. Not selfie worship, real biblical worship. Look at verse 9. Because this is how I feel like I have lived, and I know so many others have as well. And now I entreat the favor of God. Let's pause. Half-hearted, half-baked, second-rate worship. And now I'm going to entreat the favor of God. Because that's what we do. We want God to meet all of our needs, to give us his favor, and we're going to give him $50 on a $300 meal. Or whatever that means. That's a metaphor. It says, but you bring the kind of offering. Why should he show you any favor? That's a question. Everything we have from God, it's by his grace and by his mercy. Not because we deserved it. And me going into his presence and expecting him to deliver from me when I want him to, that's not the position. Verse 10, that's verse 9. Look at verse 10. Because he says, that there were one among you who would shut the doors that you might not kindle a fire. What's he saying? Kindle fire on the altar. Listen, God is so upset with their worship. He says, just close the church. Close the temple. Quit making altars. Quit making fires. Just quit it. Why? I have no pleasure in you. I'm telling you, sometimes we need to hear messages like this to help us become self-aware. I have no pleasure in you, and I will not accept your offering. Now, there's two things I want you to see in that. One is the sequence. It starts with the relationship. It starts with your heart. I have no pleasure in you. You and I aren't right. This ain't right. It's about a relationship. It's not about religion. It's not, you need to give more. No. That's religion. It starts with the person. It starts with the relationship. I am not pleased with you. I'm not finding pleasure in your offerings. I'm not finding pleasure in your heart, in the way your disposition. I'm not finding pleasure in that. Oh, by the way, I'm not going to accept your offerings. Listen, God doesn't need our money. He doesn't need our time. He doesn't need our energy. That's what we give him in worship. Gordon Dahl said it like this: most middle-class Americans tend to worship their work. Work at their play, and play at their worship. As a result, their meanings and values are distorted. Their relationships disintegrate faster than they can keep them in repair. Their lifestyle resembles the cast of characters in search of a plot. Wow. Right-sizing our lives. Whole life worship. Everything is about us. Paul wrote the church of Rome in his letter to the Romans, one of your books in the New Testament. He wrote it from Corinth. He gave it to Phoebe, who lived in Santorini, which is like literally, I've been to both of those places, maybe 10 miles apart. Phoebe takes the most densely doctrinal statement that Paul ever writes, Romans, delivers it, didn't just say, here, I'm gone, but very likely stood before the people, read it to them, okay? So now you have Phoebe, a lady, standing before the church at Rome. He's reading this letter to them, and she gives this letter, this densely packaged letter from verse chapter 1 to chapter 11, all this theology. He ends the statement with this, Romans 11:36. This theological treatise, he says, for everything comes from him and exists by his power and is intended for his glory. Everything that is breathing and living and existing in, it's you and me, everything that we have, everything we don't have, all of our dreams and aspirations, everything is intended for his glory. Don't miss that. Chapter 12, verse 1. And so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because he Because of all that he's done for you, let them be a living and holy sacrifice. This is the kind of worship that's acceptable. We see what unacceptable is. Okay, we see that in Malachi. Second rate, making ourselves more important than God. That's unacceptable. This is what is acceptable worship. When we literally take our lives, every bit of it, 7 days a week, 20, 24, all of it, we give it to him. We say, my life is yours, God. This is truly the way to worship him. When you give your second best, selfie worship. When my pleasure supersedes God's pleasure, selfie worship. Number three, when worship ends with me and not we. Listen, I want you to hear this. God will be worshiped. I don't know if you heard that. God will be worshiped. Say it with me. God will be worshiped. What you and I get to decide is, are we going to be his worshipers? He will be worshiped. If we don't worship him, the rocks will cry out. If we don't worship him, the trees will clap their hands. If we don't worship him, guess what? The heavens are right now out there declaring the glory of God. Everything about his creation is made to bring glory to him. And we choose whether or not we're going to be a part of that. Now, the sad thing is I really tried to personalize this week, and I'm thinking, oh, what if Grace Point doesn't worship him? What if we just come on Sundays? We just do this thing called church. What if we don't worship him? You know what I believe? I believe God will go down the street and he'll find believers who will worship him. You know what? I know this so well that if America doesn't stop worshiping itself, then God will go to another country and find up some other worshipers. He did it with Israel. Israel, God's people, chosen, all that kind of stuff, bringing them right up to nearly to the point of Christ coming to this earth. And Jesus, I mean, God makes it very clear, verse 11. He says, for from the rising of the sun to the setting of the same, my name, circle the words, my name, will be great among the nations in every place, and incense will be offered to my name. It's about him, not about us. And a pure offering, for my name will be great among the nations. Now notice the emphasis on nations, not nation. Up until this point, Israel's thinking, we're the ones, we're the chosen ones, we're God blessed, God bless America. No, God bless Israel, that's us. Listen, if we aren't worshiping, God will go somewhere else because he will be worshiped. That's not a fear tactic. That's just a hard truth. In fact, I think verse 14 is kind of like the final nail in this, because he says this, for I am a great king, says the Lord of hosts. And my name, notice again, my name will be feared among the nations. I don't care where you're from or whatever. God is calling all the nations to worship him. We don't do missions around Grace Point just because missions is cool, because Lori and I used to be missionaries or any of that kind of stuff. Listen, missions exist because worship doesn't. This is the way John Piper said, missions is the ultimate goal of the church. Worship is. Mission is not the ultimate goal of the church. Worship is. Missions exist because worship doesn't. Worship is the ultimate. Worship is ultimate, not missions. Because God is ultimate, not man. When this age is over and the countless millions of redeemed fall on their faces before the throne of God, missions will be no more. You tired of missions? Get to heaven. It is a temporary necessity, but worship abides forever. Worship, therefore, is the fuel and the goal of missions. Missions, worship does not end with me. It goes to we. And I mean the four corners of the earth, because all the nations, from the rising of the sun to the setting down of the same. Now think about that. I was in Japan a few weeks ago. The sun rises in Japan, goes all the way around the world, and ends in Hawaii. Anyone want to go to Hawaii and worship? I do. From the rising to the setting of the same, he will be worshiped in all the earth. That's why Brooke Lane, who's part of our church, is in Spain helping to mobilize people to raise up worshipers in North Africa. That's why the Peavies are in Japan, because they're raising up worshipers in Japan. What's the chief aim in life? Think about that. The chief aim in our life, this has not been a new question. This is not, maybe it's not, maybe it is a new question for you. But if you go back 377 years ago, there was a group of followers of Jesus nearly 400 years ago, sat down and wrote what is called the Westminster Shorter Confession. And in that is a catechism. Excuse me, the Shorter Catechism. A catechism is something that's of a discipleship mechanism. It's a learning mechanism. The very first question they ask in that Shorter Catechism is this. What is man's chief aim? What is the chief aim in life? Here it is. Write it down. To glorify God and enjoy Him forever. Look it up. Westminster Shorter Catechism. Christians, churches, people from all around the world have said yes to that statement. Our chief aim in life is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. Listen, worship. It's glorifying Him. Worship is giving Him our first and our best. Worship is centering our life so that we're living to please Him. Not just please ourselves. Worship is about gathering as many people, not just me, but we, many people as we can, to gather before His throne and bow before Him. Why? The glory is due His name. Bow your heads with me, please. What's your chief aim? What is your chief aim in life? Is it to glorify God and enjoy Him forever? If it is not, right here and now, I would say the most important thing you can do is to recenter your life on becoming and being a lifelong worshiper of Him. Give your life to Jesus, who gave His life to you. Embrace His grace and realize that before the foundations of the world, He was calling you to be a worshiper of Him. Right here, you just say, Jesus, I want You, I need You, I give my life to You. And if you're in this room and you are a follower of Christ and you have gotten off track, you have been offering Him less than your best and your first, you've been giving only and serving only and worshiping only to your pleasure and not His pleasure, right now, where you're at, say, Jesus, I'm sorry. You deserve the glory due Your name. And I'll spend the rest of my life doing just that. Father God, You know us. No one's hiding. You're fully aware of what our aim is in life. Father, I pray that our aim is to glorify You and enjoy You forever. And anybody that, Lord, is not there, I pray You would right now call them to You. For You are worthy. This is going to be a time that we're going to just give You time to space to just reflect, and you can sit in your seat, you can stand and raise your hand, you can come and kneel at the front. This is your space. This is your worship. You're bringing your worship to God. Worship however the Lord prompts you, because He's worthy. He's worthy.
Thanks for listening to the Grace Point Church podcast. To stay up to date on all things GPC, follow us at Grace Point NWA on Facebook or Instagram. As you go, be people who show and share Jesus in everyday conversations with everyday people. Live sent.